welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to get an update from the Minneapolis VA on treating heart disease, meet a new Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network, and check in with the senior enlisted leader of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
During the month of February, we celebrate Black History Month. This is a time for us to recognize the rich cultural heritage and contributions of African Americans. There are memorable moments and individuals throughout Black history who contributed to our nation's military. In the late 1800s, the Buffalo Soldiers, an armored cavalry regiment, were known for their courage and discipline as they patrolled the Western Plains and fought in the Spanish-American War. During World War II, the Tuskegee Airmen, a group of African American aviators, took the fight to the Nazis with an impressive level of success. Our Minnesota military shares a story of Black history as well. The storied 16th Battalion, a group of patriots who, in defiance of prejudice and an ill-advised policy, volunteered to keep the community safe during the First World War. Led by Captain Clarence Wigington, the 500 members of the 16th Battalion served Minnesota with distinction and as a Minnesota Home Guard. It's in this spirit of patriotism, selfless service, and duty that the men and women of the Minnesota National Guard serve today. And it's the spirit that makes your Minnesota National Guard strong and ready to respond.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to talk about structural heart disease treatments at the Minneapolis VA, and I'm joined now by Dr. Stefan Bertog, who is an interventional cardiologist at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. He is the co-director of the Cardiac Catheterization Lab and co-director, together with Dr. Alok Sharma, of Structural Interventions. He is also Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Minnesota. And gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Dr. Bertog, I want to start with you. Can you tell me, how long have you been at the Minneapolis VA?
I started out as a fellow in 2002, and then intermittently I've been at the VA until 2006. Since 2006, as a staff cardiologist up until now, so almost 15 years now.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for taking care of our veterans.
I would say that I don't regret any moment of it because I really enjoy working here.
Very good, sir. And Dr. Sharma, same question. Can you tell us how long you've been at the Minneapolis VA?
Hi. Thank you for having me here. I joined Minneapolis VA almost a year and a half ago, so I have been relatively new to Minneapolis VA, but I was a fellow here from 2008 to 2014, did my residency and fellowship at the U. So I have really fond memories of being trained here, and that was the reason I came back here.
Well, doctors, we're thrilled that you took some time to join us today and that you're out there taking good care of our veterans. Dr. Bertog, what we wanted to talk about today was structural heart disease. Can you explain to us what that means, sir?
Heart disease, I think, can be categorized into four main categories. Diseases of the heart muscle, which can make the heart weak or stiff. Diseases of the heart vessels supplying the heart with blood, also called coronary artery disease. Abnormalities of the heart rhythm. And finally, which is what we're talking about today, abnormalities of the structure of the heart. And this includes either narrowing or leakiness of the heart valves, usually caused by wear and tear and sometimes by congenital, meaning inherited problems as well. Also included, I think, in the category of structural heart disease are abnormal connections between the chambers of the heart, most commonly between the two small chambers of the heart called atria. There's a small pouch also of the left small chamber of the heart called left atrial appendage that can be the source of strokes, and though there's no problem with this pouch or appendage itself, it can be sealed off with a plug, thereby structurally modified to prevent strokes. Those are really the main structural problems that we deal with on a daily basis.
We're speaking with Dr. Bertog and Dr. Sharma from the Minneapolis VA on Minnesota Military Radio. Dr. Sharma, I heard Dr. Bertog say that some of the structural heart diseases are congenital, which is something that's present at birth and perhaps the people that have those problems don't even know about it. But can other structural heart problems develop from age, just from living life?
That's correct. I think the most common structural heart problem we see in elderly is aortic stenosis. That's narrowing of the valve through which the blood pumps blood to the entire body. And the most common symptoms of that valve are exertional shortness of breath, fatigue, which means people cannot, they have decrease in their exercise tolerance. They can have a pressure or heaviness in the chest. And they can also have lightheadedness or dizziness, and sometimes they can have loss of consciousness. It's not uncommon to have rhythm problems of the heart, as Dr. Bertok mentioned. They can have palpitations or irregular heartbeat or skipping of heartbeat as well.
Very good, sir. Dr. Sharma, can you tell me, I understand that there are some common minimal invasive structural heart procedures. Can you describe that to us and how you use that how that's used as opposed to the old style where you crack open a chest and make your do your surgery?
Yes. I think in this day and age with the advances in technology, we can do a lot of procedures which traditionally were done through open heart surgery. The most common, like I earlier mentioned, is aortic stenosis and replacing the aortic valve through a small catheter either in the groin or through other smaller arteries in the body. The other is a leaky valve called the mitral valve, which is the connection between the left upper and the lower chamber, and we can repair that valve through a small catheter through the groin. We could also repair congenital birth defects, like a hole in the heart and put a plug in there. And people who have atrial fibrillation or the rhythm problems of the heart who need to be on long-term blood thinners, we can plug that small pouch which forms the blood clots in people who have atrial fibrillation and prevent them from having bleeding problems on blood thinners or from having stroke. So those are the most common structural heart procedures, but we can also do some innovative and not so common procedures, like if there's a leak around the heart valve, we can plug that as well. So there's a lot of advances in the technology in this day and age, and people who cannot get open heart surgery, they have multiple other options.
Dr. Bertog, it sounds like by using the cardiac catheterization methods, you can do some amazing things today.
Yeah. I think, in terms of how these procedures that Dr. Sharma was describing a moment ago differ from open heart surgery or conventional surgery, and maybe, if we focus on procedures of the heart valves, which are the most common procedures, usually when a heart valve needs to be replaced surgically, the heart is exposed, and this is typically done by separating the sternal bone or pressed bone, and the heart is infused with a solution that prevents it from beating, and the delivery of blood to the body is accomplished really by an external mechanical pump that takes over the pumping function of the heart. This then allows the surgeon to expose the valve in question and repair or replace it with a new valve. At the end of the procedure, of a conventional surgical procedure, the heart is then stimulated to beat again, taken off the external mechanical pump, and the chest is closed usually with wiring the sternal bone. As you can imagine, patients usually remain in the intensive care unit overnight and in the hospital for an average of a week, but it takes about a month or two to gain full strength because those operations are, after all, big operations. On the other hand, when the heart valve is, say, replaced minimally invasively, a catheter, which is, as Dr. Sharma just described, a hollow, sort of flimsy, hollow, flexible tube that is used to deliver the new valve into its respective position. This tube is usually inserted, as you mentioned, into a vessel located in the groin crease and removed at the end of the procedure. Most such cases are performed under moderate sedation, which means that the patient is sleepy but not fully asleep, and also while the heart continues to beat. As one could imagine here, the recovery time after such a procedure is shorter than after conventional open chest surgery. Provided things go as usual and there are no major complications, most patients are discharged 1 or 2 days after the procedure, and can assume usual physical activity, I would say, within a week or so after the procedure. So the two options differ, you know, tremendously, and particularly in the ability to go back to the usual life pretty quickly.
Thank you, Dr. Bertog. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Dr. Bertog and Dr. Sharma about structural heart disease treatments at the VA. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Dr. Stefan Bertog and Dr. Alok Sharma from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center about structural heart disease treatments at the Minneapolis VA. And Dr. Sharma, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about the choice between cardiac catheterization or open heart surgery. Is there a way that you make a decision whether you do the catheterization or you do the open heart? I would imagine it has something to do with the severity of the problems.
That's correct. I think once we determine that a veteran needs a certain valve fixed or a hole closed in the heart, then we decide what's the best way to treat that. And sometimes the veterans are very frail and elderly and have a lot of other comorbid or other medical conditions that put them at a higher risk of going through open heart surgery. In that case, we meet as a group, what we call the multidisciplinary team approach, where we sit with the surgeons, our general cardiologists, the imaging people, and the nurse practitioners, and then we determine what the best treatment option is. And if we feel like it's going to be a really high risk to go through open heart surgery, or the recovery is going to be a problem, or is going to be a prolonged recovery, then we give them the option for catheter-based treatment. And with more and more studies coming out, we know that the catheter-based treatments are equally as good or maybe better than open heart surgery in some cases.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Bertog, are there symptoms that a patient would see or feel or that would indicate that they have some type of structural heart disease?
Yeah. I think as Dr. Sharma mentioned earlier, in the case of valve problems, which are either narrowings or leakiness, the most common problems or symptoms are exertional shortness of breath, fatigue, meaning patient's exercise tolerance may have diminished, pressure, heaviness, or pain in the chest, or in the case of aortic valve narrowing, sudden loss of consciousness. Some patients may also develop an abnormal heart rhythm, causing palpitations, which is a sort of a sensation of an irregular or rapid heart rhythm. Of course, all these symptoms are nonspecific, which means that other heart conditions or other organs can cause similar symptoms, such as diseases of the heart muscle or vessels supplying the heart with blood. For example, shortness of breath can be caused by lung disease. Therefore, individuals with these symptoms then undergo a number of tests, such as CAT scans of the chest, ultrasound examinations, or sometimes also angiography, during which contrast, which is a liquid that lights up under X-ray, is injected into the heart vessels, supplying the heart with blood. Information obtained by these tests can then be used to help determine if symptoms are indeed related to structural heart problems or to other problems.
Dr. Bertog, that sounds like when you first meet a patient, you're the investigator and trying to find out what's the cause of the problems.
Yeah. And, you know, the challenge, of course, is that any of those symptoms are nonspecific. And in the example of fatigue, you know, there are probably a list of maybe 100 or more causes for fatigue. And really making sure that those symptoms are caused by structural problems, which then would lead to a procedure, is very important.
We're speaking with Dr. Alok Sharma and Dr. Stefan Bertog from the Minneapolis VA about structural heart disease on Minnesota Military Radio. Dr. Sharma, you mentioned that you either with the catheterization or the open heart that you can repair or replace heart valves. Seems like that's a big job. Can you briefly tell us, how do you do that? How do you make those repairs?
Yes, I think before we do the procedure, there are a lot of tests we do to plan the procedures. And as Dr. Bertog mentioned, a CT or a CAT scan is a big part of replacing the heart valve, especially the aortic valve. And we make sure that we know the exact size of the valve we need. We make sure that we have big blood vessels so we can put the catheter through the blood vessels and reach the heart and replace the valve. But most of the time, the valve, if you're replacing the aortic valve, it comes mounted on a small balloon. We cross the valve, the old valve, through with the wire, and then inflate the balloon, and the valve is mounted on the balloon, and then the calcium on the valve keeps it at place, and the new valve starts working immediately as soon as we deploy it. The other way to do that is sometimes the valve come crimped on a catheter. We just put the catheter through the valve and release the valve that way. The leaky valves can be repaired through what we call a clip, where if there's a gap between the leaflets of the valve, we bring bridge that gap and close it with a small clip, which can be done through a catheter through the groin as well. So those are the most common ways to replace or repair the valve.
Fascinating and amazing, Dr. Sharma. Dr. Bertog, I'm wondering, it sounds like the Minneapolis VA Medical Center is very innovative, and how would you rank what you can do at the Minneapolis VA against other organizations, other hospitals, in terms of structural heart disease treatments?
I think there are several features of our program that make it unique. And one of the most important features of a good program is experience. And, for example, in the last fiscal year, our Minneapolis VA has performed the highest number of structural heart procedures throughout the entire VA system. Since we started replacing aortic valves through a catheter in 2014, we've now performed close to 500 aortic valve replacements through a catheter. In the example of aortic valve replacements, our results have been very good, with a 30-day mortality of 2% or less, actually, which is well below the national average, despite a patient population with frequently, as Dr. Sharma mentioned, very challenging and medical and medical problems and advanced age. Another feature, I think, that is that we have an outstanding structural team. This includes, you know, our structural coordinators, Annette Botten and Brenda Thoft, who have been in our team since the beginning, and Tasha Tennyson, who joined us last year. It also includes our imaging expert, Dr. Mbai, who is the backbone of our program because it allows us to take the best possible pictures of the heart prior to and during the procedures. And then we perform most complex procedures together with backup from our surgical colleagues, Dr. Soule, Dr. Kelly, and Dr. Shunley. In this context, it's important to mention that we discuss all our patients prior, as Dr. Shunley mentioned, in a conference, so that we can make the best possible decisions. I think what distinguishes our program from many others, particularly in the private sector, is that we have less time constraints and can spend more time than most institutions with the patient and families to explain the heart condition that the patient may have, the tests, as well as the planned procedure and follow-up. Further, we have a very efficient process that allows us to provide quick access and perform, you know, the workup and procedure within a short period of time, which is very important because many of our veterans come from far away, such as, like I said, Nebraska or Wyoming. For example, it's not uncommon for a veteran to arrive on a Tuesday, undergo the necessary tests on a Wednesday, and end up with a valve replacement on a Thursday. I think one last thing I want to mention is that the VA system has a very important advantage over many private institutions, which is that its goal is not to generate profit. We're all, you know, salaried workers who are not dependent on the number of procedures we perform. No one is going to ask us at the end of the year how many procedures of a particular kind we've done. And this really allows us to the freedom to provide the care we think is best for the patient and not the care that generates the most revenue. And, you know, lastly, I think our team, we're not just colleagues, but friends, and really enjoy working with one another. And we really enjoy our veterans. I've worked in an institution for 15 years and would not want to work anywhere else. And I'm sure that Dr. Sharma, any of the team members would probably say the same. You can probably comment on that more also, Alok.
Dr. Sharma, we just have a few seconds left.
Yeah, I agree with you, Stefan. And it's a very unique program what we have here. And we do I'm proud to say that I think the work we do here competes with any best institution in the world. And we have done some procedures here which nobody else has done in the entire world. And we do a good job at educating the fellows. We have University of Minnesota fellows who train with us. We also are a part of major educational conferences to teach people how to do these procedures. So I agree absolutely what you said, Stefan.
Gentlemen, this has been fascinating. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd like to thank you both for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, and thanks for providing us with the opportunity to speak.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Stefan Bertog and Dr. Alok Sharma from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll meet a new yellow ribbon company right here in Minnesota. Minnesota Military Radio, I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet a new Beyond the Yellow Ribbon network. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
February is Black History Month, and I want to take a moment to honor all African-American veterans, those serving today and those who have served throughout history. African-Americans have played a significant role in our military history over the past 300 years. Despite adversity and limited opportunities, veterans of every race, color, and creed have strengthened our country, and diversity makes us stronger as a nation. Join me in celebrating Black History Month by honoring the significant contribution African Americans have made to our state and country.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Annette Kuiper, who is the Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and she heads up the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon programs and has for quite a while. Annette, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Annette, we've had a crazy year in the last year. We had a pandemic worldwide and hit here in Minnesota, and we've had to do a lot of things virtually. So you probably didn't wear out another car in the last year, but you're still busy. And I understand that we've got a new Yellow Ribbon County, and that you had to do this a little bit differently. They've been proclaimed, but they haven't had the event yet.
Right, that's true. We've been working with all of our groups across Minnesota, our communities, counties, and companies, and doing a lot of things virtually, and they haven't let up on their great work that they've been doing. And actually, Tom, today, it's really a good model for what we're trying to do across Minnesota, and that's really combine communities to have stronger Yellow Ribbon networks across the state. And West St. Paul was already a Yellow Ribbon network, but now they've added in the other communities, surrounding communities of Lilydale, Mendota, and Mendota Heights to form the Northern Dakota County Network. And I think that even makes them stronger to combine the efforts of neighboring communities to meet the needs of our service members, veterans, and military families.
And you've got a couple of veterans joining us today that were instrumental in that.
Oh, absolutely. And they have been for quite a long time. It was just compiling and getting their action plan together, but they've been doing great things in their communities. Our first guest is Neil Garlock, and our second one is Ed Eigel, both of whom have been very active in their Yellow Ribbon networks and have been leaders in their community to help us move their effort forward in their communities.
Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, Neil Garlock, I want to start with you. I understand you served in the United States Marine Corps and then followed that up with a couple dozen more years of service with the police department.
Yeah, I did one enlistment in the Marine Corps, and then I was a police officer for 34 years.
And you just shared with us that recently you gave up the title of mayor.
Yeah, I did two terms as mayor, and I thought that's appropriate. And I had told my wife when I ran for mayor, if I won the mayor's election, I would do two terms and then go on to something else. And that's where Ed comes in.
Well, a lifetime of service, Neil, and thank you for that. And Ed Igo, Ed, I understand you served the United States Army and then went into banking for a career.
I did that. That is correct.
And can you tell us when you were in the Army?
I was 1961, the early start of NOM. I was deployed overseas for 22 months. Got out and finished my education and went into the banking business and spent almost 40 years in banking, primarily with the Bank of America organization, and came back to my hometown years ago and got involved in local politics, like Neil, and spent 12 years on our city council, 2 years as our mayor pro tem, and then resigned. I chose not to run anymore and have been working with Neil for the last couple of years developing the Northern Dakota County Yellow Ribbon.
Gentlemen, sounds like you've both given back a lot. We're talking to Neil Garlock and Ed Igo from the Northern Dakota County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network on Minnesota Military Radio. And Neil, I want to come to you. The Northern Dakota County Network, as Annette told us, includes the cities of West St. Paul, Lilydale, Mendota, and Mendota Heights. What does it mean for those communities to come together and become Yellow Ribbon and help support our veterans and their families?
Well, I think hats off to Ed and West St. Paul, who had their Yellow Ribbon program established for many years. And Ed came to me probably 2 years ago and said, "Nate, do you think we should, could you join our Yellow Ribbon?" And I said, certainly. I said, we should have been involved prior to this. But I said, thank you for the invite. I made a point that I said to Ed, we should contact Lilydale and Mendota because they work so closely with the city of Mendota Heights. And we have so many veterans, and now including in the four cities, that it would be a great network. He agreed. We started meeting and developing our action plan, and everything just went to get together very well.
And Ed, I want to come to you. I understand you're the business liaison officer for the North Dakota County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and I would guess that means you're reaching out to the businesses and doing some of the same things you did for many years in banking, talking to business owners and talking this time about the Yellow Ribbon Network.
That is the primary consideration as to what I do in operating like that. I try to get as much information out to our business community as possible. And at the same time, I tell them what the benefits are if they become one of our community partners. The community partners are basically our financial supporters, but at the same time, we provide them with a substantial amount of information for their employees, and if they have veterans working for them or if they have spouses of veterans, what have you, that gets into there. So in spreading it out to the other communities, it simply gives us a broader field to develop more information, get more people involved, and to do better service for the veterans within our area.
Well, Ed, that's a great part of town, and I'm just curious, have you ever had any of your meetings over at the Pool and Yacht Club over in Lilydale? It'd be a great place to have your Yellow Ribbon meetings.
Well, the meetings over there have been unofficial, I'll put it that way. But yes, okay. It's a great area, and our success is predominantly due to the personnel that came in from those communities and joined us. And the success that we've had with guidance from people like Annette, have made things go pretty smoothly, as you pointed out in the beginning. You know, last year was just so incredibly disorganized on every level, and yet we were still able to provide a lot of services to our communities and get a lot of documentation and paperwork done. So we're looking forward to, like everybody else, getting rid of this COVID so we can start to get back to full meetings and start spreading the word and getting it out to the veterans and their families.
Very good, sir. And Neil, what are you seeing from the military families in terms of needs? What kind of things are you preparing to provide and have you provided?
Well, we've done some, we did a breakfast with 135th over in West St. Paul infantry unit prior to their deployment to South Africa. They've been gone for pretty close to a year, and we look forward to them coming back. And as always, West St. Paul has always had an appreciation barbecue, and we're looking forward to welcoming that unit back. We were going to do a send-off at Sibley High School in Mendota Heights prior to the deployment, but then COVID set in, and we had to cancel that along with our declaration meeting that we were going to do in the VFW in Mendota. So we're looking forward to that that group coming back, and we'd like to show them our great appreciation.
Well, that'll be a great time, Neil. The welcome home ceremonies are the ones that are most fun. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Northern Dakota County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Annette Kuiper, who's the Director of Military Outreach from the Department of Military Affairs here in Minnesota. And we've got two gentlemen from the Northern Dakota County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network, Neil Garlick and Ed Igo. And Annette, I just want to come back to you. COVID has affected us in the last year, and you haven't been able to bring your Yellow Ribbon networks together so that they could have their meetings. Are we going to be able to do that in 2021?
Yes, we're holding a joining community forces in May, and we hope to have a hybrid with in-person at Camp Ripley and online for those who want to do that as well. Tom, that hasn't stopped our Yellow Ribbon networks from doing such great things and finding ways to meet virtually. And Rachel Johnson, our Yellow Ribbon Regional Outreach Coordinator, has done a good job of connecting everybody with coffee talks over Facebook and different kinds of regional meetings virtually. So we've been doing our best this year.
Annette, I knew it wouldn't stop you. You'd just keep right on going. Neil, I want to come back to you on that. One of the things that that you get to take advantage of once you've been proclaimed Yellow Ribbon is you get to get together with some of the other Yellow Ribbon networks and Yellow Ribbon businesses and trade best practices. I'm sure Annette's described that to you, has she not?
That is correct, yes. And
I'm sure we're all looking forward. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've already done several requests with other Yellow Ribbon Network people on other requests. So we've done some stuff with Rosemont and within the county, and we plan on doing a better job, but to get more active with all the other networks in the area.
Very good, sir. Ed, I understand that you and Neil have been able to form a partnership with the Dakota County Veteran Services. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we're very fortunate, I think, with Dakota County. It's got some great leadership in it, right, going from the top into the YROC people and what have you. And they have been very forthcoming with activity and information. They're helping us get the information out and spread. In fact, we just had a countywide virtual Zoom yesterday, and a lot of good information that's getting passed around. But the county stays on top of things, and we're really fortunate to have, like I said, the leadership that we do here. I'm assuming it's the same throughout the state, but I'm more familiar with what we have in Dakota County. So once we can get back and start to get face-to-face, get the information out to a little more of our community partners, we'll go from there. But the county has been absolutely wonderful in assisting us throughout everything we do.
Thank you, sir. And Neil, you mentioned in the first segment that the two of the 135 was over in the Horn of Africa, and we're expecting them home sometime this year. And I would guess that the Northern Dakota County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network is going to be at the welcome home ceremonies.
Yeah, we anticipate that to be a very big event. We love to show our appreciation to our veterans, what they've done, all veterans of past, prior, active. It's our obligation, our duty to assist them and recognize them for all the great work they do.
Well, gentlemen, I'd like to thank both of you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio, and I'd like to thank you for spending so much time during your life's service to our country and our veterans and to your cities. Annette, I want to come back to you. We've got about a minute left. What are you expecting for hopefully the second half of 2021? We'll be able to gather together in person.
Yes, we're hoping to gather all of our networks. We're looking at our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program to see how we can be most effective. And I believe Northern Dakota County has hit it on the head with gathering communities and working together. They're really modeling what we want to do across the state to strengthen all of our Yellow Ribbon networks.
Well, Annette, I don't know where you found those two high-quality guys, but I think they're going to get some fun things done in Northern Dakota County.
We couldn't do it without them. Their leadership and their expertise and their willingness to bring partners into the community and help our Yellow Ribbon Network is just a wonderful thing that we're seeing in Northern Dakota County.
Well, Annette, I hope you have some fun with that formal ceremony for the Northern Dakota County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and can't wait to see who you bring us next time.
Thanks, Tom. I will.
Thank you. That was Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach on Minnesota from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Leader of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
You bet. Thanks, Tom, for having me. Appreciate it.
Sergeant Major, I understand that we have some winners of this year's Minnesota State Outstanding Airman of the Year Awards from the 133rd Airlift Wing and the 148th Fire Wing.
Absolutely. They held their boards this past month, and just like to announce that the four winners, right? So starts out at the company grade officer, and that was Captain Scholler. And we go down to first sergeant, and that was Master Sergeant Housie. Senior non-commissioned officer is Master Sergeant Jakeway. Non-commissioned officer of the year is Staff Sergeant Lathrop. And finally, airman is Senior Airman Swenson. And again, they're from the 133rd and 148th here in Minnesota. So congratulations to all the winners and all those that competed.
And Sergeant Major, as the Senior Enlisted Leader and the State Command Sergeant Major, you get to interact with both soldiers and airmen. So this is something a little special in your position.
Absolutely. You know, it's great when we get to recognize excellence in either of the branches, on the air or the Army side. And again, just it's a great opportunity on my behalf to see these young service members, go out there and do great things.
Sergeant Major, the last year we've had to cope with the coronavirus, and now the vaccines are on the way. And I've seen recently on Facebook and some other places that the senior leaders of the Minnesota National Guard are starting to receive their COVID-19 shots.
Absolutely. Myself, General Mankey, General Wickman, General Best, Command Sergeant Major Whitehead, and Colonel Sharkey, along with General Cruz, all went to the 133rd again and received our shots this past Monday. Essentially just wanted to lead by example for all of our service members, let them know it's safe, and hopefully it's going to be effective. They say it's 95%. It's not required, as it is still emergency use authorized. But we highly recommend if the soldier, the service member, has that opportunity to take advantage of it and get the shot.
Very good, sir. And Sergeant Major, we now have a new administration out in Washington, D.C. The 59th presidential inauguration just occurred within the last 10 days. And everybody knows that they pulled in some Minnesota National Guard soldiers and soldiers and airmen from all over the United States. And some of your troops went out there as well.
Absolutely. Every 4 years, we do provide some support. This year was a bit unprecedented due to what occurred on the 6th of January. There was a call that went out essentially asking for upwards of 25,000 guardsmen, and Minnesota responded in typical fashion by sending over 750 soldiers and airmen to support the presidential inauguration. The interesting part is we sent out a task force, so we call it Task Force North Star, which was our 750 service members. The structure of what we sent out there actually grew to become Task Force Crowd, which we added additional states and territories underneath our command and control. So we had Missouri, Illinois, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands all falling underneath our task force crowd, which was Colonel Vanio and Command Sergeant Major Hofstede. And, you know, give you a real quick rundown. Their mission was to essentially protect the local populace and infrastructure at different places around Washington, D.C. And they assisted the U.S. Park Police, Secret Service, and D.C. Metropolitan Police Department.
And they must have gotten a chance to work under Lieutenant General John Jensen.
Well, now that you mentioned that, he actually stopped by and he spoke with the soldiers and gave some awards out. And I think he actually extended a few soldiers or service members as well.
Very good, sir. We just
Oh, and I'd be remiss, Tom, not to mention that the 133rd actually celebrated their 100-year anniversary to the day by flying out our service members to the Capitol to be a part of that presidential inauguration. So it was a very impressive Air and Army joint effort.
Perfect, sir. We just got a few seconds left, but I understand that we got an award for the best MP company in the Army National Guard.
Yeah, exactly. The 34th MPs were awarded the Major General Bandholtz Award for the second year in a row, which is, I believe, only the second time that's occurred. So outstanding, you know, effort on the MP's behalf. They are currently in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as, on their deployment and probably should be back in a couple months. But, again, outstanding effort on the MP's behalf and just like to recognize excellence.
Sergeant Major, we're out of time. I'd like to thank you for joining us again today on Minnesota Military Radio.
You bet. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
That was the senior enlisted leader, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Dr. Aloka Sharma, Dr. Stefan Bertog from the Minneapolis VA, Neil Garlock and Ed Igo from the Northern Dakota County Yellow Ribbon, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about the Army Corps of Engineers and our local Jewish war veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.